I'm Silvahara Pettyon. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms. Catch it on KIRN 670 AM or 95.5 HD3 FM. Hey everybody, I'm Silvahara Pettyon. For those of you who don't know me, I have spent most of my career in newsrooms across the country. And just like you now, I am at home, staying at home with the crisis that's happening around the world. Being at home and talking to my family and friends and my colleagues, it really became obvious for me that we need to have a bigger conversation about the impact that this crisis is having on us personally, professionally, and as a community. There are so many layers to this. There are so many unintended consequences to what's happening that I think if we don't talk about it, people will sort of get lost in the shuffle of really what's happening. And one of the things that really came up for me is being an immigrant, a refugee, a survivor of war, and having seen revolution and having lived in those circumstances and also within a community that it feels very close to that experience. The conversations and the impact is very different for those communities. And when you think about it, there is a lot of pockets around, not just around the country in the United States, but around the world of people who have fled conflict in order to find peace and safety in other countries and are now finding themselves in this circumstance, which is causing a whole other slew of issues and triggers for them that they don't even understand and recognize. And this conversation leads me to introduce my guest, my first and foremost, my cousin. She's my first cousin, Adriana Karapetian, and friends, and of course, an incredible psychotherapist who works with people who experience and come from conflict and trauma. And my conversations with her about this crisis led me to decide to actually do these interviews and do these segments, because I think her knowledge in this space and how she works with people and what we need in general as far as our communities is concerned while we figure out how to get through this is extremely important. Thank you for taking the time and joining us today and allowing us to pick your brain and better understand how to cope with what's going on.
Thank you for having me, Silva. Thank you.
And I should tell you all, she is in Australia. So I think the time difference is what, like 18 hours?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. And she has been extremely busy in the last week or so, maybe even longer, as this pandemic has grown, as it has moved from country to country, as it has led to countries and communities to shut down and order stay home orders and shelter in place orders. And obviously, I know you can't talk about your clients specifically and particularly, but can you tell me a little bit about some of the things that are coming up and some of the things that you've been dealing with? And I know that you've been working ridiculous hours trying to help people through this crisis.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some information and insight and some experience with people around the world. This is a very, very difficult time for everyone. It is unprecedented, and the difficulty has many, many layers and has different impacts on different individuals. Now, one of the reasons why this is a very difficult time is that we don't know when it's going to end, and we don't know how it's going to end, and we don't know what the future holds. This causes a lot of anxiety and triggers in a lot of people. In general, this would be an anxiety that normally some people would manage quite well. Mm. But I want to specify and concentrate on individuals who are specifically more vulnerable. And I can mention those that have experienced some transgenerational trauma in their lives without often knowing that they have and without knowing that it's very, very present in their life. And this transgenerational trauma that I'm talking about, obviously, what's close to my heart is trauma related to refugee and war. However, the transgenerational trauma that I'm talking about comes in different forms and comes in different images, and it comes in different experiences. You may not be a refugee, you may not have experienced war, but you may have experienced transgenerational trauma. And the transgenerational trauma comes in formats such as domestic violence, because there are very much families and individuals who have experienced domestic violence and
or
family
have,
violence.
Or have grown up in that atmosphere and not necessarily experienced it personally in their own life of being a victim of it. I think we need to clarify when you talk about transgenerational trauma, right? You could have just been present when it's happening, and that the impact of that is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. So the Syrian Armenians, or Armenians in Turkey, or Armenians in Lebanon, some of these individuals have not seen the genocide themselves. They could be people your age, my age, yeah?
Right.
But they have grown up in the laps of their grandparents, who were the first generation, who were the people who have experienced the trauma, the genocide. They have escaped the genocide. They have escaped to Lebanon, Turkey, Syria, and they have told and retold the stories in songs and in stories and in various formats to these individuals who are now in their 40s and 50s and 60s. These people have not seen the genocide with their own eyes, but they have lived it. They have relived it. And when you listen to a traumatic story, especially more than once, again and again, you actually live it. And you may not be aware of it, but it's sitting there in your unconscious. And all it takes is something like this, and that becomes awake, like a lion in you. The biggest thing that you see in these individuals is fear, okay? The fear. Often they don't know fear towards what, but they are full of fear. They're fearful to leave their house. They're fearful to leave their suburbs. They're fearful of anything. We don't know when it's going to finish, how it's going to finish, what the impact is going to be. It re-triggers and awakens this transgenerational trauma in these individuals.
This transgenerational trauma, obviously what is really close to us personally is we are of Armenian descent. So the genocide is something that we have grown up listening to stories. We've heard it from survivors. We've heard it from children of survivors. We've been taught and lived and relived it over and over again. And there is a purpose for that, obviously, is to make sure that we don't forget where we come from. And there's another layer of that. A lot of us, people our age, actually fled our countries of origin because of unrest or war or some kind of conflict. And to add to that, when we talk about transgenerational trauma, it could simply be any community that has lived through any kind of conflict of injustice. So, we know Holocaust survivors are perfect examples of people who are subconsciously live through this transgenerational trauma. Where I just want to extend this idea of what transgenerational trauma is, and it's not just, we're not just talking about Armenians and Armenian genocide and refugees who fled countries, but if you've lived in any kind of conflict zone, it could be the neighborhood that you grew up in and you had to dodge the bullets that flew around in your neighborhood. That is in itself trauma too. There's so many things that could fit within transgenerational trauma that so many of us are not aware and not, it's not something that we think about in our daily lives, but the impact of something like this and how it triggers so many different things with the world coming to a complete stop and are the things that you use to keep ourselves distracted and busy just stopping. I mean, this has got to be a complete nightmare for people who are on far spectrum of that trauma, right?
Yes, absolutely. And transgenerational trauma, as you explained, it doesn't have to be in the context of war. It can be in the context of domestic violence. It can be in the context of sexual abuse. It can be in the context of extreme poverty. It doesn't have to be people who change countries. You could have lived in that country, in America, in Australia, in Europe, but have experienced these transgenerational traumas. So we need to be mindful that this is a cohort of population that are extremely, extremely vulnerable and may very easily fall through the cracks. And this is a time that we need to stop and be aware of what's going on and what's happening with us, and be aware and be mindful if we are being triggered in these instances.
How do we do that? We hear people talk about this all the time. I've seen it on social media, but it's one thing to hear about it. It's another to really stop and really evaluate. How do we know if we're being triggered by something like a transgenerational trauma that is not at the forefront of our thoughts?
Yeah. Look, it's a very important question, but a very complicated question. But in some ways, we can simplify it. If you feel that you are not functioning on the same level as you did 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, that means something is going on. That means you need to ask for help. Now, if you are sleeping more, if you're not sleeping at all, if you are crying more, if you are detached from people, if you are arguing with everyone, if you are having fights with everyone in your family, if there's something impacting your functionality and it's impacting people around you, that means there's something going on, something being triggered in you which you're not aware of.
But a lot of people would say, well, it's obvious that those things would happen because our lives have come to a stop. We're all stressed because we don't know if we're going to have our jobs. We're all stressed because we can't see our friends or our family members. Those things are the anxieties are a natural state of, you know, a state of anxiousness that we all feel because of those obvious things that worry us. How do we know the difference between the two?
Okay, when it's impacting, when your behavior is impacting others, okay? So if you're living with a household and you can't sleep and your insomnia is impacting your partner and your children and you can't cook and there's no food around the house and your family is saying, why haven't you cooked? So you keep pacing up and down the corridor, or you're crying constantly. So these are not normal. That means you need help. You need to reach out. But you need to remember that these are very, very normal reactions. Like, you can't say, oh, if this is happening to me, then I'm having a nervous breakdown, or I have a diagnosed anxiety disorder or depressive disorder. So I think it's very important to be firstly kind to yourself, kind to others, and just take a time to sit down and talk and not push people away from you. I think that's the most important advice that I could give to anyone at this point.
Yeah, I mean, what are some of the things that you've been listening to? Particularly, I want to make sure that this conversation is broad enough that it allows people to see themselves in the conversation and have some takeaway so that they can implement some things. Part of the reason I really wanted to talk to you is because of the thesis that you wrote, right? What was the name of the thesis?
Where's My Home?
Where is My Home? So part of the reason I wanted to talk to you, because there are so many people in the world that are living in a place that is not their home. And there are so many people who are living in a place where they probably will never feel like home. But it's where they've ended up because they've found security and safety for themselves, right? And I thought, because you wrote that thesis in dissecting the impact of what happens when you don't have that security and safety of a home, and then you seek shelter and safety in another country that's supposed to be where you find peace, and something like this happens, and you are literally reliving and re-experiencing everything that you just left behind. And obviously, this is extremely personal for me, and I know you lived through the war as well. When you grow up in those circumstances and being as aware and as conscious and as open-minded as I am and seeking help and therapy, I cannot imagine what the older generation is going through as we are trying to find our way through this.
Look, looking at my father has experienced involuntary displacement 3 times in his life.
Yeah.
Okay? Not just twice, 3 times. Once when he was 9 years old and he had to move from villages to Tehran, to big city. And then once he was 45, and involuntary displacement again from Iran to Australia. Looking at my father, as long as he knows that the children, his children are safe and his grandchildren are safe and his siblings are safe, the children are safe, he's happy. So it's important to remember and take away this note, very important message, that in fact, some of the refugee families or displaced families or people who have experienced this are much, much resilient, much more resilient than the average population. So if you have a whole village of people who experience bombing and war, not everyone's going to develop PTSD. Not everyone's going to need extra support and extra help. There are some, this is a small percentage of population who will, but what happens to the rest? Which is what we don't often mention, which we don't often talk about, which is very, very important. What happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're resilient, and we have the skills and the tools that we have built to cope with that. But that still doesn't change the fact that something like this would no one is prepared for, and no one would have thought about, triggers a lot of emotional instability in a lot of people. And a lot of these cultures aren't exactly, we're not exactly open-minded when it comes to therapy and getting help and mental health. So I want to create an opportunity for them to listen to some of the stuff and say it's okay if you're feeling some type of way, whether it's anxiety, whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, whatever it is, or if it's bringing up all of these emotions from the past, it's normal. It's part of the process, and how to cope with it and what to do about it.
Look, I think I have been extremely busy. All my colleagues have been extremely busy. People need us more than before. So one thing that helps is that they realize that we are all in this together. Whether you are a therapist, whether you are a migrant, whether you were born in this country, that country, we're all in this together. So this gives some kind of peace to know, in this inner peace, to know that, oh, so Adriana doesn't have advantage over me because she's educated, or she's got, citizenship, or that person has got, you know, this and that. So we're all in this together. So that gives some kind of inner peace. But I think at these times, if you need help, you need to speak to your GP, speak to your counselor, speak to someone, your neighbor, give them a call. But often enough, people who have gone through this in the war, they have developed a lot of resistance and toughness that helped them. So, in fact, some people say, oh, at least it's not bombs being dropped on my head. I can avoid it by not going out.
Yeah, it's so funny you said that, because mom said completely something the opposite the other day. She was in the kitchen cooking, and I know that we're like having a personal conversation over here about my mom, but she said, you know, at least when we were in that circumstance, it was somewhat better because we knew when it was coming. We knew it's like identifying the enemy of and the thing that creates anxiety is a lot easier to handle and manage than the unknown of this thing that is this that's floating around that has no end, no identification, no timetable, no zone. So it's all in, I guess, how you look at it from a perspective standpoint and context. But her perception was, you know, this is harder because we knew at a certain time, at a certain way, when the bombs were coming, and we took shelter and we prayed that it wasn't going to land on top of us, but it wasn't 24 hours a day. You see what I'm saying? Even though they don't realize the impact and the consequence of that was living in trauma 24 hours a day.
Absolutely. And some of the other things I've experienced from, you know, people that I have worked with or I see now is they have so much insecurity that they think, oh, what if this virus wipes out all our identity and we don't know if we are allowed to stay in this country and we're sent back to our home country. So there's an anxiety on every level. I don't think I see individuals experiencing anxiety around food or medication or water, but more around what if they end up going back to their country, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Syria, you know, where it is. So it is my personal opinion that I think we're going to see a lot of people with anxiety and eventually down the track with depression.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Silva Harapetian Show. We're continuing this week's conversation.
It is my personal opinion that I think we're going to see a lot of people with anxiety and eventually down the track with depression. The reason being is anxiety is obviously when you start to feel anxiety when you feel you've lost control. Feel that there's something that in your life, you lost control of your life or some aspects of it, and that causes anxiety. But when that becomes prolonged, so anxiety, when you are feeling anxiety, you're not feeling hopeless and you still have hope. But when you start to lose the hope, that's the worrying time. That's the worrying time for people like me that I have to support clients. When individuals start to lose hope, that turns from anxiety into depression. Because in order to have depression, you need to experience extreme sadness and loss of hope. And I feel the longer this goes, longer this takes place, and the more isolated people are, we will see a shift from anxiety to depression.
How do we empower ourselves? How do we empower ourselves? Whether it's some of us actually have resources to reach out to therapists and have a support system in place for these types of things. And there are a lot of people who do not or don't feel like they want to, or there's shame around it or stigma around it. If there is someone listening who is wanting to take something away, that what are some things we can do to put into place to prevent that from happening?
So look, what I would, firstly, humans are designed to live in groups and herds. We're not designed to live individually. From millions of years ago until now, we don't live individually. That's why millions of years ago, people lived in herds and groups and families. They didn't have molecular families, nuclear families. they didn't have mother, father, and kids. You know, they had extended families like so many other countries still.
Mm-hmm.
If you can maintain some kind of sense of family, whether you do, you know, every so often you do Zoom meetings with your extended family, whether you do Skype or whether you do WhatsApp with your loved ones, try to do that. You need to put in effort to do that. You need to feel you are surrounded with your loved ones. Now, if there are people that don't have extended family, that's fine. You might have church group, you might have religious group, you might have some kind of university class.
Your friends might be your family, you know, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, if you have never been very big on people, you can have adopt a dog, adopt a cat, you know, do something that fills your jug, you know, satisfies you, gives you this sense of happiness. You know, some people are very happy to have dogs and cats and, mm-hmm. you know, birds and pets, you know, not necessarily. That's fine. Whatever keeps you happy, this is the time to do it. If you have always wanted to do gardening and have never done gardening and you have this tiny garden or this tiny balcony, stop growing fruits and veggies. You know, you have some purpose, have some meaning. Make sure you feel you are doing something.
That brings you joy, something that brings you joy, that brings you satisfaction and happiness. And you know, when we talk about happiness, well, all of us have this vision of happiness being so grand, but happiness could really exist in the small moments in your life. And I think that's so important to remember. Having been through some challenges in my own life, I can say that the things that got me through to the other side was being able to look at finding happiness in the moments of the day and not necessarily being happy all the time, right? Because that's just impossible, particularly in this crisis. So whether it's a sunshine or a sunset or watching a kid's play or picking a flower or just, you know, look for those moments. I know that's worked for me. And I know that's what you're saying, is that find those moments that bring you joy. And there's been no better time than now, when we're sheltering in place and having to stay home, to do things that you've always wanted to do.
And get close to nature, you know, as you mentioned. Wow. I think nature is you know, we anecdotally say, if you are depressed, if you have very bad depression, go and hug a tree. Go and walk on the grass barefoot. Go and walk on the beach barefoot. We always say that. Go and hug a tree. You know, I actually have done it once to know what it feels like.
being a psychotherapist, you can't tell your clients to do that if you haven't done it.
Absolutely. So I had to hug a tree once to see what it's like, you know.
So what was it like?
It was okay. It wasn't that bad. I wouldn't recommend walking barefoot on grass or sand. I don't know. I mean, I could recommend, but I don't like doing it. But get close. If you have a backyard or front yard, you know, go and plant something. Go and water your plants, you know. Go and sit in the sun and watch the trees.
What is it about nature that somehow uplifts our moods? I mean, I know there's truth to that, but
it's very powerful. Nature is extremely powerful. We humans often forget the strength of Mother Nature, and it's mother. It's a nurturing thing. Mm. It's giving, you know. Always remember, happiness is a journey. It's not a destination. Happiness is not something that you'll eventually get to and, oh, everything will be nice. No, happiness is a way of life. It's a way of being, you know. And if you want to be happy, firstly, you need to listen to your body. If you're hungry, eat. If you're tired, sleep. So you need to be kind to yourself, you know. And if there's a book that you always wanted to read, go and find that book. You know, if there's knitting that you were doing and it's half done, go and find that knitting and finish that jumper.
Mm.
You know, like that. But why I say gardening and pets and things like that, because that's all part of, goes under the umbrella of nature.
Mm.
Right. You know, it's all things that are from nature. They're not plastics. They're not solid things. They're living things, you know?
Yeah. How much does access and technology and information and social media contribute and play a role in the level of anxiety and how quickly we escalate from anxiety to depression? How much does that contribute to that process?
We all need to limit how much we watch the news.
Right.
And we need to limit you need to be aware of where you get your source of information from and how much you listen. If you are listening to the news, and obviously bad news, 4 or 5 hours a day, it's not good for your psyche.
Yeah. It's so ironic to have this conversation, considering I spent my entire career in the news industry. But, you know, the times have changed. Back then, you know, you had appointment television. You sat in front of your TV at 5 o'clock or 5:30 to get your news for half an hour. That's when I got into the business. But the reason I ask about technology is because now everything is literally at our fingertips, right? And it's on our phones. From the moment you open your eyes to the moment you go to sleep, you can be scrolling and looking and updating, whether it's the news or people regurgitating the news or their opinion of the news or their perspective of this crisis or what they're going through. So regardless of what it is that you consume, I guess what I'm asking is the consumption and the access of the information that's available that we consume, that does have an impact on some level on the level of anxiety that we have and how quickly our anxiety turns into depression.
I don't think you've missed an enormous amount of essential news that you've missed in 24 hours if you check once a day, you know?
Yeah.
And you need to remember that everything is going to be still intact, you know, if you check the news in 24 hours' time.
Yeah. Any other recommendations, suggestions, anything else you want to talk about? I know we've talked about a lot of things in the last few days, you and I, but I know you made some notes and wanted to cover some things. Is there anything else that I haven't asked that you'd like to cover?
Look, I think we need to also remember that when we are talking about people who come from refugee backgrounds and war, we need to remember that these individuals may not necessarily have a trust in the government and people in authorities. So I've just made some notes here so I could mention. We need to make sure that, obviously everyone does their job and everyone has a role in this, that we provide the correct information and health and education to these individuals, to know that if the government is saying you need to keep social distancing, you need to wash your hands, it's not a conspiracy, it's not something that... So they need to know that this is for their well-being, because some of these individuals come from communities and countries that there's a disconnect between the government and the society, yeah? And they often don't trust. And they always believe, oh, if the government says this, there's a hidden agenda in this. But we need to make sure that I make sure that I pass this information to all my clients, that if the government is saying social distancing, washing your hands, don't leave the house, there's no hidden agenda. This is for your own well-being, and you need to listen. So this is a huge challenge.
Well, that's I don't think it's just a challenge for people who have come from other countries and from who have experienced governments that they don't trust. I think that's also true for the United States. And I know that's true in Australia, too. I think in general, there is and what's happening and how everything is being covered and how everything is the information is being distributed doesn't help to foster trust in the government at the moment. It is important to talk about that because there are people who have not been listening to anything the government has been saying because they just historically have no trust in authority, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Health education forms a huge part of our work, my work. Mm-hmm. And health education is particularly a little bit difficult if you are dealing with individuals who have a lower literacy level. Now, I'm not going to mention countries or communities, but And if you add lack of language skills to that, or lack of ability to use technology, multiplies the issue. So I think we need to be very mindful and not assume and always reinforce this health education to people.
I think it's important to honestly talk about these things and be real and raw about the conversation, because these are things that people are thinking and feeling and considering, but sometimes they don't know that's where it's coming from, and sometimes they won't speak about it out loud. But if, you know, it's part of the reason why I felt like I needed to do this, and because I do have the platform and I do have, you know, amazing people like you in my life that I can have these conversations with. And I think if one person takes value out of figuring out how to, you know, taper their anxiety and stop themselves from spiraling down and, you know, then if it helps one person, then we've done what we need to do.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think this is the golden opportunity. If you have always wanted to have therapy, or if you have always been recommended to have therapy, and if you've always said, no, I can do it, I don't need anyone else, this is the time to reach out for help. This is the time, and just talk. And I think this is an amazing time that you don't have to be in a room with someone you don't know and share your stories. And it could easily take place over the phone, over WhatsApp or Zoom or Skype. So people would feel even safer than before that, you know, they have the ability to just press and end the session. Mm-hmm. So if you still feel at the back of your mind that you would benefit from seeing someone, this is the time.
Yeah.
This is the time. And I am convinced that you will not regret.
Yeah. And essentially what you're doing is simply just having a conversation with someone who's willing to listen. And essentially what you're doing is maybe even having the types of conversations that maybe you cannot have or don't feel comfortable having with your family members or your friends. And the ability to be heard without judgment, there is value in that, because sometimes we tend to not share what we feel because we feel like we're going to be judged, just because if you feel it, then it's real and it's true, and there's a place for it, and it's important to share that. So thank you very much. Within all of that, I should have done this earlier, but I'm going to ask you, how are you doing? Because not only are you going through this process yourself and your family, and I know your dad is a big part of it, but you're also helping other clients cope with all of this other than being exhausted. How are you handling all of this? No, I just know because you said you were exhausted earlier before we got on the call. You just, and I know you've been working late hours. So,
Look, I'm feeling very positive. Still have a lot of energy, a lot of love to give to my clients and people around me. I feel fantastic, and I am approaching this sometimes with my public health hat, sometimes with my psychotherapy hat, and I am going with very open mind and open view that this could last for more than 3 months, could last for more than 6 months. And I always think, am I comfortable in my office, my house, to do this? So that's my first question. And I am surrounded with a lot of supportive people. I have a lot of support around me, which I think is something that people need to think about. Do you have support? What's your support network like? Revisit that. Maybe get in touch with your support people. So I do have a lot of people. I have had 2 phone calls from friends this morning. Phone call from my dad this morning, seen and got a kiss and hug from my family this morning. So just to remember that this isn't the end of life. You know, there's things that happen, there's things that can change, you know, everything is possible. But do live in the here and now. You know, I have learned that many years ago, to live in the here and now.
Yeah, actually, I was before we got on the call, I reread your thesis, and I'm not gonna lie, the first time I read it, I couldn't actually get through it because it felt so incredibly personal in so many ways, and I had never looked at the topic from the perspective of in the context that you wrote about, in the impact it has, not having a home. The impact it has on us in general, subconsciously. I just never connected the dots that way. And it was such a personal experience for me. But I also read about how you learn to live in the moment. So it was, yeah. I don't know if you want to share it, but I just wanted to share that with you.
Look, I don't know what it's like to have a home. I don't know. I still don't know. I feel incredibly appreciative and blessed and honored to live in Australia. But when you weren't born in a country, and I mean, I was 15 when we came to Australia. As comfortable as I am, I don't feel it's my home.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't think Iran is my home. I don't know, or maybe this is home and I'm confused, but it doesn't feel like home. So when I think about Iran, I get this feeling that I don't get when I think about Australia, but I'm not that comfortable in Iran. So there's a lot of confusion,
Yeah. And
mixed in my mind.
essentially, we're even as appreciative as, and I feel the same way. I feel very blessed and honored to be living in this country, right? But there is that element of you were always a guest wherever you are, whether you're in the States or in Australia or even back in Iran, we were guests in someone else's country, right? And I think you wrote something really poignant in your thesis about you feel like you're not deserving of being where you are because you're just thankful for being there. So that impacts how you see what your life and how what you accept in your life and how things transpire in your life. There's so many layers and complications to this experience. We can spend another hour talking about it. Thank you for taking the time and talking with us. I know you'd rather spend it with your family, and
Thank
for
you
those
so
of you
much.
wondering how she de-stresses, she sent me pictures of food she cooked the other day. Right?
Yes, so my self-care is making food and baking,
Yeah.
and my family absolutely loves it.
They reap the benefits of you being stressed or de-stressing in the process. But anyhow, thank you so much for joining us. For those of you who stuck around and were able to listen to this conversation, I hope you were able to take something from it. And if this encourages you and inspires you to have a conversation with someone else, or call a friend, or post something positive on social, please do so. And if you think one of your friends might benefit from this conversation, or your family members, nobody needs to know you're sharing this. You can just send them the link and have them listen to it. I think it's important that we continue to talk about this, not only personally, but also within our communities. I have to remind myself on a daily basis to be kind to myself, be kind to everybody around me, because we're all in this together. So, with
Yes.
that, thank you so much. Appreciate you joining
Thank
us.
you. Thank you so much.